Well, hello, all you regenerative agriculture fans out there. Today, I'm speaking to Jim Gale, a four-time All-American National Wrestling Champion and successful entrepreneur. The same year his daughter was born, he discovered permaculture, and it changed his life. Today, he's an educator, an expert permaculture designer, and the founder of Food Forest Abundance. He's also an advocate for sustainable off-grid living, innovative home construction, and permaculture as curriculum in schools. He's working on solutions of the world's most wicked problems, and you're going to hear a lot about them today. I'm Judith Farrell Horvath, shepherdess and owner at Fairhill Farm, where, besides the livestock, I help new farmers accelerate new ventures and their own agricultural projects, no matter how big or small, and help them to achieve success. On this podcast, we'll hear encouragement and entertainment in tales of struggle and success from regenerative farmsteaders, ranchers, and adjacent entrepreneurs, because I believe in a network of interconnected, small regenerative farms being the key to a resilient food supply. Along with living soils and clean, nutrient-dense food, it's up to us here today to ensure an earth that future generations deserve to inherit. This podcast is brought to you in part by FOOP Organic Biosciences. All listeners can enjoy 10% off any FOOP product by entering code REGEN. That's code REGEN at checkout. Visit www.thefoop.com and don't forget code REGEN. And now, enjoy the interview. Hello, Jim, and welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Judith. It's a pleasure to be here.
Would you do me a favor and would you introduce yourself and talk a little bit about what you do and who you are so that the audience can learn more?
Absolutely. So my name is Jim Gale. And in 2007, I woke up to what's going on in the world. I had my first two daughters and I learned permaculture all at the same basic 6 month period. All right. And I became very obsessed with studying the problem and then asking, what is the solution to the problem? And now, 17 years later or so, I'm sitting in my food forest. And this is a 23-month-old food forest with 240 different species of edible and medicinal plants, herbs and spices and a dozen types of bananas and turkeys, and it's paradise. And what I learned and what we teach on a global scale is how to take the poisons out of our landscapes and how to design life and food all around us, which as a result of doing this at scale, we reverse mass extinction and deforestation. We reverse cancer, diabetes, and heart disease trends. We end world hunger and we end tyranny and we create peace on earth in general terms. So that's what we're doing, is we're intent on changing the world with everybody listening.
Wow. That is one big audacious goal. I salute it. It all sounds amazing. It sounds utopian.
Yeah. I'm sitting in it. Like, that's the fun part, Judith. It's like, I'm not talking about a hypothetical solution. It's nature. It's God's design. It's the idea whose time has come stronger than all the armies of the world, right? And that's the fun part, is when we demonstrate it, it's just joy on and abundance on every level.
So where are you exactly? I see palm trees and banana trees behind you. So you're somewhere tropical. The sky is gorgeous.
It's beautiful. Yeah. I'm in St. Cloud, Florida.
Okay.
Now, I'm from Minnesota, where my buddy has a food forest that makes this one look like a baby, because this is a baby, right? And he's got 300 different types of edible plants. So this can be done everywhere.
This is amazing. So the whole concept of food forest is, what is the origins of that?
Well, I mean, food forestry, that term has been around. It's basically designing a forest of food that takes the same amount of maintenance as any other forest. The difference is it is loaded with a diversity of crops and food plants that we love. And these are perennial plants as opposed to annuals. Right? Perennials are things like fruit trees and berry bushes that you plant once and they can provide food for your great great grandkids.
So why is this just now? It's going to sound like a stupid question, but why is this now just so new? Like it makes a lot of sense. And I know the people in South America have done this for a long time. The Amazon is, if I'm not mistaken, the Terra Preta Earth and all of the areas and the sites of the ancient cultures, they think that a lot of that was human created. Am I right? I'm not the expert, you are. So can we talk about that a little bit?
Well, we'll start with, where does this idea come from? This is the oldest idea in the book. Mm-hmm. It is literally this idea of the Garden of Eden everywhere. That's what this is. And yes, the Amazon rainforest was a designed human settlement, a designed food forest 5,000 years ago. And people can go on Google and look this up. They've taken LIDAR and they've studied the roads and the cities and the pathways, and they can find where the communities were. And then they study the crops in areas where there's the most densely populated communities. And it's this, it's just food everywhere. So as the people left, the food forest continued to grow and create more diversity, which is now the Amazon rainforest.
That's amazing.
It is.
That is absolutely amazing. Yeah, I've seen some of the stuff with the LIDAR, the ground penetrating radar that they have. And there's ancient massive civilizations that are underneath the jungle. And we didn't even know that it existed.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah, there's awesome. Just so much we don't know about the history of the earth. It's just so amazing.
Oh, that you said a mouthful there. His story is a lie, right? His story is a complete lie. It's time to write our own story, a story of abundance. Because when we demonstrate abundance everywhere, we take away scarcity, which leads to fear, which leads to recruitment for war. So when we simply do this on a global scale, and when I say simply, I mean that. It is infinitely more simple and convenient to have this type of landscape than it is to have an American lawn, right? Those 47 million acres of lawn are the physical foundation of humanity's enslavement and the biggest opportunity that ever exists.
Well, I've read a lot recently about grow food, not lawns. It's continuous tillage and replanting it. You did say a mouthful as well. I mean, you know, you kind of back up and you talk about scarcity mindset being a way for people to be quarrelsome with each other because you want what you don't have and then you're afraid of losing what you got. And yeah, that's how wars happen. Yeah,
it is.
That's fascinating. Yeah. So where did you learn about all these things? First of all, that was a crazy year for you. Sounds like you learned a lot of things and school of life was in session that year, I'll tell you. So where did you learn about these permaculture concepts that applied to food forests? Yeah.
Yeah. The first time I heard the term permaculture, I was developing land. I had just done really well in the mortgage industry. I was 30. And I wrote my goals. I started a company and ended up doing about $1.3 billion in revenue in 3.5 years from scratch. I then had a lot of time, a lot of money. I sold the company. I bought a boat, lived on the ocean. And then I found Costa Rica. And I started buying land like crazy because it was, I love the jungle. I love the monkeys and the cicadas and everything to do with the jungle. And when I was there, I bought this cattle pasture. Lower lying land, and it was mostly deforested. It was just desert relative to the jungle. And my vision was to turn that into a permaculture golf course, a golf course that had food growing everywhere. And I started hearing that there were people in the community that were trashing me, that were slandering me and saying I was a horrible human being and all these things. And I was curious as to why they were saying that. And their names are Jen and Jen. And so I invited them into my office, my real estate office. And I said, why are you saying this? We're doing good. And they said, you don't know what you're talking about. And they're very angry individuals. And they're yelling at me saying, you've never heard of permaculture. This isn't permaculture. And I had never heard that term. So after they left my office, I got online and it blew my mind. I learned what they're talking about. And so sometimes it's the biggest critics that give us the best advice, right? When we get our egos out of it. Yeah. It's like free consults. So that's when I was headlong into the problem, studying 12 hours a day, what's actually happening in the world and all the corruption throughout the government and everywhere. And I read Bill Mollison's quote, though the problems of our world are increasingly complex, the solutions remain embarrassingly simple. And I started to bawl.
I'm just thinking about that for a second. That's profound.
It is.
It is. Bill Mollison being considered to be one of the founders, grandfathers of permaculture, right?
Exactly right. Yep. Him and David Holmgren are considered the fathers of permaculture, the science. Now, permaculture is simply mimicking after nature. But what they did is they observed and interacted and they created ethics and principles. The ethics are very simple. Earth care, people care, and voluntary share. And that's the foundation of what permaculture is. It's doing things that are good and sustainable and regenerative. And the principles become the design science that leads us. And through the help of the total permaculture network, the design principles and science is, again, it's not a hypothetical. It's demonstrable all over the world.
Even in places like Minnesota, it's so cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the growing season is certainly shortened there. There's got to be different types of permaculture that are used there.
It's the same ethics and the same principles. It's different plants and different strategies. So in a place like Arizona or the deserts of Jordan, the first thing you do is catch and store water, right? Mm-hmm. And which is fundamental throughout all permaculture design. It's a principle. But yet it's way more important in somewhere like Arizona or the deserts of Jordan than it is in Minnesota. And so in Minnesota, you want to catch and store heat and energy, right? Mm-hmm. So you design your beds, your guilds to suck in as much heat as possible. You might put a big black rock or some rain barrels, water, like black barrels in a certain area, which can heat up and store heat when it is sunny out and things like that.
Fascinating. So permaculture would also influence probably building and architectural elements within a human abode, not just outdoor stuff and the growing things.
Yes. Permaculture stands for permanent culture. Mm-hmm. So it really is kind of a design science that will lead to, when adopted, it'll lead to a sustainable, regenerative, permanent culture. So it includes everything. For instance, the houses that we're building over here, they're not made with wood, right? The lumber industry is a fraud. The whole thing is a lie. It is not sustainable. It creates monocultures at mass scale, just like soy and corn and wheat and everything else. But so we're using recycled steel. So it's 90% recycled, 100% recyclable, and there's no termites, no fire, no mold. It'll last four times as long as a stick-built house, and it's relatively hurricane-proof. And it's the same price, right? So that's what we're doing is we're incorporating. Our roofs aren't just roofs. They also catch solar and water, right? So we stack functions of every house to make it a multifunctional system that integrates and instead of segregates the outside system as well.
Wow, that's fascinating. So when it comes to energy consumption for your sustainable buildings, are you able to be completely off grid and have a relatively, normal modern life?
We're 100% off grid and we live in absolute luxury. I mean, to me, this is the most luxurious thing of all. Mm-hmm. The smells, the tastes, the experience, the feeling, the frequency of this landscape right mixed within our housing. Like if you can see through here, you see some mulch on the ground. That is an area yet to be developed, right? And I do want to point out, people say money doesn't grow on trees. They don't know what they're talking about.
Are those mangoes?
Yeah, those are papaya.
Papaya. Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Look at that.
Yeah, isn't that cool? And
it is
so
cool.
this is February after a very cold January. And so this is the food forest at its lowest output. Now you can see the leaves coming back. You can see the life starting to pop in again. In fact, as we go through here, the reception might get a little funky in here, but I just want to point out, look at these bananas coming in.
Oh, look at that.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, a big batch of
Look at
bananas.
that.
Look at them. Wow.
And these are banana circles. These are pathways that are designed. So this is the value of permaculture design. We raise the land up here, and then when we have a rain event, we funnel the water into the banana circle.
Interesting. Well, Florida's not really short on rain typically, right? We're not where you are.
Right, but it does have dry seasons, and bananas like a lot of water. So
Oh.
that's the function of design, is finding what plants like to have full sun and what plants like to have shade. What plants like good drainage, like avocados, and what plants like a lot of water, like bananas? That's the design process, is putting it all together.
So if this were to be adopted on a grander scale, I mean, what would you suggest that real estate developers do to incorporate these concepts into planned communities, for instance?
That's such a beautiful question. And that is where we're going. So we're partnered with New Energy World, who are the builders of all these homes. And we're standing up these communities all over the world. And we've created a model called the Freedom Farm Academy, in which we duplicate and we demonstrate permaculture to the max. And the stack of functionality of this business is absolutely incredible. Number one, it's beautiful, and it creates all the food, water, and energy needs on site, so we don't need a grid. We're 100% off grid. If the grid goes down, we still have got power, water, and energy. It also functions as a nursery. And we are in the midst of a food supply chain disaster. And so growing food during a food supply chain collapse is a really good idea. Yeah.
A little bit of arbitrage there. Yeah. Take advantage
right?
of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then the other functions, I've given two tours today. And when we give tours, we have 100% inspired rate. So when I give a tour, people walk around and they're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. They feel it. They taste it. They touch it. They smell it. And then when they go home, they now want a food forest. So we then created a landscaping entity to help foodscape their properties. So we put all these systems together into one model that will defeat all the world's armies and bring peace on earth again.
Wow. That's really fascinating to think about, having food available so locally that it's in your own yard, in your own community year round, as opposed to being shipped 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 miles. That is. It's going to be a steep climb for society, I think, to adjust to being willing to forego that instant gratification of, you know, living in Ohio, which is where I am, living in Ohio and being able to go to the grocery store and get blueberries in February.
Yeah.
That's going to be something that it took a lot of generations for us to get to where we are now, and it might take a few for us to get to the next step.
If history is,
yeah.
Yep, you're right, Judith. If history is even partly true, and I don't really believe any of it, but this idea of the Garden of Eden and the separation and all this stuff going on, what we're experiencing right now, this psychological operation, the psyop, is as old as it gets. This is the ultimate game, I believe. And I could be wrong. This is just my hypothesis. is that we're playing a game, and the win of the game is peace and abundance and joy and love and service in the Garden of Eden. The win of the game is achieved through faith and courage, which happens to be the armor of God. And so that's how I look at it, and what it brings me joy. Like the statue, this is the arm of the farmer, and that's the symbol of tyranny and violence. The farmer's saying, no more. That's what we're doing. We're saying, we're not going to comply with you. Instead, we are going to serve our friends, our family, our community. We're going to integrate. We're going to create diversity. We're going to love. And the most selfish thing I could ever do is serve people, because as a result of long-term service, people want to reciprocate. And what's coming back to me is massive amounts of energy, some in the form of fiat, which is our currency. Yeah. And then my joyful obsession and duty is to then reinvest that in food forests and schools and prisons and community centers and inspiring people to do this, because that's the only way we're going to win this war, is when we inspire enough people to live outside of the system and to create abundance for those who might still be stuck in the system.
Have you actually seen some long-term results from your mission here? Like, have people actually gone and created their own and come back to you and said, hey, look what I did. Like, hey, Jim, look, I thank you. And here's what I did, and show it to you.
So in 2.5 years, Del Big Tree first launched us 2.5 years ago on the high wire. And we have now served people in 54 countries and 50 U.S. states. Just out of Galt's Landing, our installation crew has over $500,000 worth of installations in the last 6 months. So it's actually happening at scale exponentially right now.
Damn. That is some strong uptake. Do you think, what is the reason for that level of uptake and interest, do you think? What do you attribute it to?
I attribute it to the fact that people are, their egos are breaking down because of the fear and anxiety and stress and concern and toxins that are coming at us from every direction. And the ultimate toxin, the ultimate poison, is fear. Mm-hmm. Fear is a contraction of everything creative and good and loving and life, right? Evil and live. It's not good and evil. It's live and evil. Fear is not living, right? Fear comes from this illusion that we are separate from the creator, from source, from God. I grew up in Minnesota, so I use the word God. If somebody grew up on the other side of the world and they use another name, great. I'm not going to, that would be silly for me to hate somebody because they use another name. So with that in mind, people are starting to wake up. We are in the apocalypse right now. It is, which means lifting the veil, the great unmasking. We are in the ascension of human consciousness. In fact, if you check the Schumann resonance is off the charts right now, right? So it's happening at every level of our society, of our being. Tesla said, if you want to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. But the word think is misplaced. If you want to find the secrets of the universe, feel it, experience it in the present, because that is the gift from God. That's the only real is right now.
Jim, I hear what you're saying. There's going to be a lot of people who hear this and they're like, and I'm done. Click goes the iPhone. Because yeah. It's too tall of a drink for them to take. Like, yeah. how do you bring people along at a rate that they can accept without turning their world inside out? You know, you got to be careful, like waking people or flooding them with too much to overwhelm them. Like, how do you bring people along slowly? Like, everyone's comes to their own revelation and their own understanding at a different rate. Yours is pretty unvarnished. It's like right out there.
It's right a tall out there. Order.
It is right out there. Yeah.
It is. So here's how. When we demonstrate it, when people stand here, there's nobody that's ever stood here and said, this doesn't work, because here it is.
Okay.
So demonstrating the solution that I'm talking about, demonstrating this type of radical abundance is the way. Right? Talking about it is one thing. But I have a question for you. When did you start waking up to what's going on? Do you remember a moment where you went, or was it a series of moments?
I think it was a series of moments for me, that kind of happened, like for me physically, I realized that when I ate different things, I was able to achieve different levels of success, concentration, quality of sleep, quality of life, clear thinking, less stress, things like that. So that's one sort of facet. I woke up when I started realizing the direct correlation between what I ate and how I felt. The next area of correlation was when I lived in suburbia and a family moved in next door, and the woman who had moved in, I was gardening out in my backyard at the time, and she said, "What are you doing?" You know, she's a brand new neighbor, and I came over and was over the fence, and she said, what are you doing?" I said, "Oh, I'm a gardener. I'm gardening, and you know, I'm just growing some vegetables here." And she says, "I love tomatoes." And I said, "Oh, well then here's some." And I like reached across the fence and handed two tomatoes to her in this my outstretched hand. And she recoiled and she looked at me and she says, "How do I know if they're safe to eat?" And I kind of stopped, and it's like one of those moments when you feel like time kind of doot, 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 doot. Like I felt it happen. I felt this sort of like time froze for me for a second. And my daughter was with me. She was about 8 years old. And I looked at my daughter and she's watching, you know, kids are like, they're always watching.
Yeah.
And I looked at this woman and I remember thinking, is she dumb? Is she playing a joke? Is this like, am I going to offend her? Like, what's happening? Like, I felt this sort of time, space, continuum terror thing like happening. I was like, what is going on? Like, how is someone able to function and they don't even okay? And so I kind of said to her, I said, "Oh, well, you know, they're safe when they look like they do in the grocery store." And she says, "Oh, okay." And then she took them and then she's like, "Nice to meet you." And she went inside. And after she was gone, I turned around, I looked at my daughter and I said, what do you think about what just happened there? What do you think in there? And I said, "I see your little brain turning. What do you think?" And she says, "Mommy, that woman is ill-equipped for life."
Oh my gosh, that's so wise.
So she's 8 years old. Eight. Oh. And I went inside and I said to my husband, we need to get out of suburbia. And he was like, "What?" Yeah. And so, yeah, within the next couple of months, I got busted for illegal backyard check-ins. And like everything kind of went sideways, you know, and I ended up, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
You know, that was sort of the beginning of when I changed from what I thought was just sort of a fun little hobby, which apparently now has a name. It's called homesteading. But my hobby turned into going more. And then within a few years, we were able to get a farm, and then we moved to the farm and it didn't have anything here. And so the last 10 years have just been this like learning curve. But I've been doing homesteading stuff now for 18, 19 years.
Awesome.
So there's been a series of little awakenings along the way, but it was the physical health, it was the social weirdness. And then I worked for a scientific research company for 10 years. And when I realized the way that scientific research is conducted, that was tremendously eye-opening in a way that the funding works, and then what research gets out there and what is published and what is paid attention to, and then how people just grab something and then they build on top of it and they don't actually read the methods and protocols and who funded it. It's applied science. That broke my heart because I have a sciences background. So that was the other piece, the systems thing. And then of course, becoming a farmer, learning about big ag, and then learning about living soil, and learning that plants need a lot more than just N, P, and K. There's so much more than that. and just the life in the soil. And so it's been this step, of awakenings to me. And it continues. Like, it just keeps on happening. But I'm like you. I don't want to stand around admiring the problem, because then you start to, like, you just want to, like, cry in the shower on the floor. So what are
Well,
you gonna
I
do?
at right. And the reason I asked Judith is because along the way, many seeds were planted. Many people planted seeds, because your comment right before that was people are gonna, it's gonna be too much for them to handle. But what happened is a seed was planted. And now what's happening right now around the world is those seeds are being nourished as people wake up to the insanity all around us. Then they start looking for solutions that make sense. And once people, these enough seeds are planted and enough nourishment, even in the case of, well, I like to say fiat is crap and we like to compost the crap, right? Crap is compost. And all these crazy things, the CNNs, the mainstream media, the Fox, all of these mainstream media narratives, it's all crap. And when people start hearing things that are outside of that make more sense, then all of a sudden, all of it'll come together, sometimes in a series of awarenesses or sometimes in one big, oh my gosh. And so that's what I do. I plant a lot of seeds.
Literally and figuratively. Wow, that's fantastic. If someone's interested in learning about permaculture, and well, what would you suggest that they do in order to start learning?
So there's two ways that kind of polar opposite ways to go about it, and then there's everything in the middle. If somebody is either very frugal, very DIY, and or very broke, right? And so permaculture is for everybody. If you're living on the street and you go and you've got a corner of a park somewhere or something, you can literally start planting food there. You can plant Jerusalem artichokes, like my buddy who just left, who's a military genius and very awesome guy. He plants Jerusalem artichokes all over public land, right? Because it'll turn into free food by the end of summer and then forevermore, right? So you can literally start with very little, and you could start permaculture in your space, wherever that may be. And like, for instance, if somebody's got $20, you can go to the store and you can buy fruits and veggies, and you can then take the seeds out as you're eating, and you can start using those seeds to germinate and plant more plants, especially if they're non-GMO and if they're at a farmer's market and if they're good, viable fruits and vegetables. On the other hand, on the other side of the spectrum, if somebody wants to turn their life into basically a model of regeneration and joy and abundance and service and smart entrepreneurship and business, then get a hold of us at Food Forest Abundance. And that's what we do. We've got a team of 40 designers around the world, hundreds of partners, thousands of abundance ambassadors. And we have come together for a common mission to catalyze a shift that leads to mass adoption and win the war.
Wow. Very inspirational. I find that very inspirational. There's something empowering about, in a time of insecurity and things spinning off into illogical behavior, there's something very empowering about something solid in the time of so much liquid. You know what I mean? Like some land to stand on when everything else is liquefying. Yeah, there's
Exactly.
something about that.
And there's something infinitely empowering about knowing who we are. So Sun Tzu's book, The Art of War, you might have heard of that book.
Yeah, bet.
It's the most, go ahead.
I said, yeah, a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So that one of his fundamental deductions is know thyself, know thy enemy. 1,000 battles, 1,000 victories. I've sat with that and meditated on that concept, that quote, for a long time, for many, many days, over years, period. And when we realize who we are, we've already won. This is a temporary construct. It's a temporary experience, but we are not this temporary shell. We are much bigger than that. We are part of the divine somehow in some way. And I'm infinitely ignorant. I'm ignorant in infinite ways. But what I do know for sure is that this is temporary and I'm more than this, which leads to faith and courage. And there's a sentiment, faith and courage is the armor of God, which is supported by Nikola Tesla's thing about frequency, vibration, and energy, and supported by Napoleon Hill's statement, whatever the mind can conceive and believe it can achieve, which is also supported biblically. When we stack all of these awarenesses into one thing and we demonstrate faith and courage and freedom and abundance and service, and this is, I love to point this out, the most selfish thing I could ever do is serve as many people as possible. And when we get to that point, then the rest is just fun.
Do you feed other people around you with the stuff that you grow?
So many people. So one particular fellow, his name is Mike. He's become a brother and a good friend. He came August 2022. So that's about, what, a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And I gave him a sweet potato sprig. If I had any sweet potatoes right next to me, there's some over there. But I gave him a sweet potato sprig. And it was about, 2 feet long. It was just a vine with some leaves on it. And he has propagated, or he is growing, 100 pounds of sweet potatoes from that one vine. And he's given vines to 20 to 30 of his friends. So that one little vine, that little act of love and service, has now created infinite exponential abundance.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Now, what about all that extra fruit? Obviously, you've got a whole bunch of papayas and bananas and things like that there. What do you do with all of your extra fruit? Do you sell it at a local farmer's market? Do you give it to a food bank?
Your own so CSA? We're building our own CSA right now.
Okay.
And we have mostly, because this is a baby food for us, like this cherry tree, this mulberry tree, the Jamaican cherry, the papaya. Mostly we're giving starts away now, but as these fruit trees come into fruition, right, then it's exponential. We can sell them, we can give them away, we can donate them. The birds, the bees, the animals, everybody benefits from this type of system.
That's beautiful. What about people who live in cities? There's only, so much space in between the concrete.
Yeah. One of the most important things we can ever do is turn our opportunity zones, take every city park and turn it into a food forest. Take every school. In fact, I've got two presidential candidates. One of them is I just got known he's coming here. But if all we did was turn all of our schools into these permaculture paradises where the students are learning permaculture to grow their own food, then that would change the world, because the students would never put up with poisons anymore. They would simply design and install these types of landscapes everywhere, right? Look at the sugar cane and the bananas, and it's so much fun. And by the way, we have Airbnbs here. So if anybody listening wants to come and just hang out with us in our food forest, we're on a private 400-acre lake. So everybody's invited, and you can come here and you can walk around and you can gather food and enjoy this amazing space.
Wow. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
What books would you recommend that people read or pick up, or courses or places to visit online? What resources would you recommend people pick up to get started?
My favorite books, Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich is an epic one. I got a lot from David Hawkins' Power Versus Force. I learned about the power of love, the power of joy relative to the power of shame and humiliation and pride and anger and rage. That was a big one for me. There's a bunch more, but those are my two fundamentals. And there's probably a bunch more that are slipping my mind at the moment. Anastasia, The Ringing Cedars. That's another fantastic one. It's all about living this type of life from Anastasia, who is just awesome.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
All right, so I have a little bit of an off-the-wall question for you. You've
Good.
inspired me to feel free here to have this
Yes.
conversation. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay. I'm sure you're familiar with the concept of some people being NPCs.
Yes. Non-player characters.
Yes.
Yes.
I have wrestled with this. I
Yeah.
can't decide if that might be true or if they
Yeah.
might just still be asleep. Do you have an opinion on this? I can't believe I'm saying this. I can't believe I'm saying
I love it. I love it, dude. No, I
Yeah.
have a deep understanding of this. I'm still an NPC on multiple levels, right? There's a lot of things that, so I've got a master's in neurolinguistics. We run programs, loops. We are programmed by governmente, which means mind control. And some of those programs are still installed, right? The whole point of enlightenment, having a light mente or a light mind, is a mind free of programs. So NPCs are simply people who are unconscious. They are simply playing social roles and they're running loops and loops and loops. So whatever they learn on the mainstream media television, right, the program that's installed in their mente, that's what an NPC is. But everybody can be inspired. And that's the good news, is 100% of people, even the most wicked among us, can be inspired. And that's what my intention is to inspire as many people as possible to love life again and be present.
That's beautiful. That actually makes me feel a little better. And you really believe that that can be achieved through food forest and permaculture, like nature and food as being the path to that level of enlightenment across society.
I witness it every single day. I was sitting with Bobby Kennedy and I said, and again, I don't believe in any force and violence, taxation, government, any of that stuff. I'm also aware that these entities have all of the infrastructure. And once these entities are actually in service of humanity through voluntary means, not through slavery means, then boom, we change the world like that, like overnight. Within between now and the election, the whole thing could shift and we could literally be on a path to simply manifesting peace everywhere. So I see it every day. It's absolutely real.
Wow. You've given me a lot to think about here. I'm going to have to replay
Awesome.
this a couple times.
Awesome, my friend. Awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to have to meditate on all this. And I do. I meditate just about every morning before dawn. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah.
This is my meditation chair right here.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah.
Love it.
Isn't that fun? Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been amazing. How can people follow you and learn more about your endeavors and everything?
If you'd like to come visit, it's Galt's Landing. So it's GALTS landing.farm. If you want to get involved in any other way, it's foodforestabundance.com.
Okay. All
Thank you,
right.
Judith.
Yeah. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure. And
Yeah, mine too.
wow, this is so interesting.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Together we win the war and we create the Garden of Eden everywhere. Peace on earth is in our future. You know, and it's together. It's by doing this together that we do it. So thank you.
That's beautiful. This podcast is brought to you in part by Foop Organic Biosciences. All listeners can enjoy 10% off any Foop product by entering code REGEN. That's code REGEN at checkout. Visit www.thefoop.com and don't forget code REGEN.